appreciate everyone's presence this morning. We're glad you're here. If you're visiting, we're especially glad you're here. Hope to have an opportunity to talk with you a little bit before you have to leave this morning. It is a holiday weekend. I think Monday is Labor Day, and so some of our number might be out of town visiting in other places or making plans to go out of town. But hope everybody will travel safely. Our prayers will be with you, and hope that you'll have a good time wherever you might be going, if you're going away, and have a safe trip back home. This morning, just before we begin our study, I want to show you a couple of slides. This is not really what we're going to spend most of our time talking about today, but I do want to show you this. This particular slide, as you can see, is entitled, if you can read this, "Almost All Christian Groups Now Accepting of Homosexuality." This is from the Pew Research Center, which is a reputable research and polling organization. If you hear Pew Research, you can usually kind of count on it as being a pretty good quality. And so almost all Christian groups now more accepting of homosexuality. And so this compares the rate of acceptance of homosexuality among these religious groups from 2007 to 2014. And so what this reflects is that in 2007, 58% of Catholics accepted homosexuality, but in 2014, 70%. Now, that's not what the official position of the Catholic Church is, but 70% of Roman Catholics now accept homosexuality. Among mainline Protestants, and so this would be Protestant groups that are a little bit more liberal in their theology, a little bit more liberal on social issues, so-called social issues. In 2007, 56% of members of these Protestant groups accepted homosexuality. But now, 2014, two-thirds, 66%. And you go down here, Orthodox Christian groups, 48% accepted homosexuality in 2007. Now, 62% in just 7 years. That large an increase. Here are all who would identify themselves as Christians. 44% accepted homosexuality in 2007. But now, over 50%, most of those who identify themselves as Christians accept homosexuality. And you come on down, here's evangelical Protestant groups, a little bit more conservative in their approach. In 2007, only 26%, only 1 in 4. Now about 1 in 3, and so you can see the trend is on the rise. Even among the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, one of the most conservative groups on moral issues, 12% accepted it in 2007, and now 16%. There's not a single group in which the trend is going down or even staying level. None of them. And so that reflects what's going on in our culture. Here's the second slide I wanted to show you. Gives a little bit more detail. And then the title of this, many members of many Protestant denominations now more accepting of homosexuality, from the same group, Pew Research. And it notes specific denominations among the Protestants. There's African, it just goes in alphabetical order. African Methodist Episcopal Church in 2007, 54% accepted, now 61. American Baptist churches, you can see the increase there. The Anglican Church, 63% accepted it in 2007, now 67%. That's the Anglican Church. The Episcopal Church over here, up to 83%. You might notice right here, Churches of Christ. And you know, we could discuss what view of the church that might reflect, and maybe that's for another lesson sometime. But among people who would identify themselves as members of a local Church of Christ, right here, in 2007, 31% accepted it, now 35%. That's not a huge increase, but it is an increase. 1 in 3. Now that's a pretty startling number. I'm not saying 1 in 3 among us, but among those people that would identify themselves as members of a local Church of Christ, 1 in 3. Accept this. And again, you can go on and, you know, here's some others. Seventh-day Adventists, you know, very conservative group. The Southern Baptist convention here. Another fairly conservative or really conservative group when it comes to moral issues anyway. All of these are trending upward. All of them trending upward. Well, that just reflects the way things are going in our culture, just going in this direction. And so you can see why this needs to be addressed. And so we made arrangements for Saturday at 4 o'clock. And then it's 6:30 again. We're going to meet together. Brother David Pickup, he's got some good knowledge in this area. He deals with people who are trying to work themselves out of this particular lifestyle. And he's going to come and talk to us about these things. And I hope we'll support that. I hope we'll be here and we'll support that effort. Now, let me say this. I know it's football season. I understand. I know as much as everybody else in the room that it's football season. And that Saturday afternoon and Saturday night, that's when the football games are played. And I know there are people here who are college football fans. I'm one of them. We're college football fans. I hope that we'll come out and support this. And so put your TV on DVR or something like that, whatever it is. Even if you miss the game. You know, the outcome of the game my watching the game has no effect on the game itself. Zero. It's not like, oh, they lost, but if I'd been watching, they would have won, you know. And so I hope that we'll come and support this. And I understand that for some of us, it's not just a matter of watching the game. We've got tickets. The tickets are expensive. They're not cheap. I used to go to a game, and I could go and buy myself a Coke and buy my ticket. $20. The $20 would cover the whole thing. Now, that's not the case anymore. Not even close. But I'll just say, I hope that we'll support this effort. It is an important subject, and it's something that needs to be addressed. And so I hope that we'll come out and do our part to be here and support it. That's all I'm going to say about that. I was thinking about the hymn, Take Time to Be Holy, the other day. And I want to talk about a phrase that's found in that particular hymn. I think that's 598, I think is the number in our book. And so I thought maybe this is one of those songs that has an interesting story behind it. Well, so I went online and I began to research it a little bit, and I didn't find one of those interesting stories that's sometimes behind the songs that we sing. But I did find some interesting things about the hymn, Take Time to Be Holy. It's been printed in 253 hymnals. Wow, I thought that's a lot. 253 hymnals. It was written or first published in 1888. You can see that it was written originally in 1874, but published first in 1888 by Ira Sankey. It was first published in New Songs and Sacred Solos, but it also appears in the Baptist Hymnal, the National Baptist Hymnal, the Free Will Baptist Hymnal, the Methodist Hymnal, Churches of God Hymnal, Songbook of the Salvation Army, Hymnal of the Evangelical United Brethren Church, the Seventh-day Adventist Hymnal, Hymnal of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the Modern Hymnal, Great Songs of the Church, Hymns for Worship, Sacred Selections for the Church, Christian Hymns number 2 and number 3, if you remember those books that we used to use. And so it's just has been a very widely published song, very popular song. And it is a good song, Take Time to Be Holy. It encourages the worshiper to engage in various actions that would produce holiness. Prayer, for example. Speak oft with thy Lord. Speak often with your Lord. Bible study and feed on His Word. Those things are going to produce holiness. Personal meditation. Spend much time in secret with Jesus alone. And so that's going to help produce holiness or sanctification in our lives. And helping the weak. And so service to others as well. Our focus is going to be on the first part of the third line. Make friends of God's people. Make friends of God's people. So I want to talk a little bit this morning about friendship and choosing good friends, making friends of God's people.
What I want to do in the beginning is just go to the book of Proverbs and let's look at what biblical friendship is like. What does the Bible say about friendship and what friends are to be like, what they do for each other? And so Proverbs 17, verse 17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Earlier in this chapter in Proverbs, the writer has referred to things like strife and gossip. And so, for example, look at verse 14. "The beginning of strife is like letting out water. So abandon the quarrel before it breaks out." And so here is strife and arguing and quarreling under discussion. Verse 9. "He who conceals a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends." And so you've got somebody going out and they're gossiping, spreading a matter, talking about things really that should not be discussed among others. Well, that's going to cause a problem between friends. And so you're going to separate intimate or the closest of friends. Verse 11, "A rebellious man seeks only evil. A cruel messenger will be sent forth." And so he refers to fools and rebellious men and cruel messengers and those who would justify the wicked and the wicked who would condemn the righteous. But in contrast to all of that, here he says, a true friend, a genuine friend, will love at all times. And a brother is born for adversity. And so there is a friend. There are friends who are going to love you no matter what. In difficult times, in good times, in hardship, in stressful times, there are those friends. And they may be few. And you know what? If you can find one of those or two of those or three of those... Well, you really found something very valuable. You'll be a wealthy person indeed if you can find a friend who will stick with you and who will love you at all times. The second part of this passage has been explained in this way, that in adversity, as friends go through adversity together, in difficult times, as friends go through those difficult times together, that common experience binds them together and it makes them, that develops between them a relationship so strong that they are like brothers. And so a friend loves at all times, a brother is born for adversity. And so your friends who are as close to you as your own brothers, well, they will be by your side and help you and encourage you through difficult times. Look at Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24. Proverbs 18, verse 24. "A man of too many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And so this is very much like the first one. There's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. A man of too many friends comes to ruin. Well, I'm not exactly sure what he might have in mind there, but he reminded me of Luke chapter 15 and the story of the prodigal son. Remember the prodigal son, the younger son, he went to his father. He asked his father to divide up his inheritance and give him that part of the inheritance that would be coming to him. So the father did. And the prodigal son left home, went out and wasted all that money, it says, in riotous living. Now, later on, his older brother will say, well, he spent his money on prostitutes. You know, just lived a wild, rebellious, unrestrained life. And then, of course, he came to ruin. And, you know, and I know it's just a story, but you can just think, here's a guy, he goes out, and as long as the money holds out, he's got all kinds of friends. They're all about spending time with him and having a good time with him. And as long as he's buying, you know, they're right there with him. But when the money runs out, and it's no longer to their advantage as they see it to spend time with him, as long as they cannot get out of him what they want from him, well, they're nowhere to be found. And so he finds himself all alone feeding the swine. A man of too many friends, well, you know, he's going to come to ruin. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And so again, in hard times, in hardship, in stressful times, when it seems like your life is a disaster, that there are those friends who are going to stick with you. That's what genuine biblical friendship is. Look at Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27 and verse 6. This is an interesting statement. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, and deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. That sounds like Judas, doesn't it? Deceitful are the kisses. You know, your enemy's going to flatter you, and he's going to take advantage of you, but faithful are the wounds of a friend. Well, what does that mean? Well, a true friend will tell us what we need to hear. Not just what we want to hear. He will tell us what we need to hear. Look at verse 5 of the same chapter, Proverbs 27. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. And so sometimes we need rebuke. Sometimes we need to be wounded in this sense. It may be that when we're doing wrong and we're going astray and somebody rebukes us for it or reproves us for it, well, that might hurt our feelings. But you know what? They can see the path we're on. They're trying to correct us. And they're doing it because they're our friends. And they want us to thrive and do well. Look at verse 9. Oil and perfume make the heart glad. So a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. Do not go to your brother's house in the day of calamity. And I take that to mean you're loyal to your friends. Let your friends be loyal to you. You know, your brother may live a long way off and really may not be as involved in your life from day to day as your next door neighbor is or your close friend is. And so don't think, well, no, you got friends right there. Let them support you and encourage you. And so he says, better is a neighbor who is near than a brother far away. Be wise, my son, and make my heart glad that I might reply to him who reproaches me and so forth. But the point is that sometimes a true friend, a genuine friend, he's not going to tell us what we want to hear. Sometimes he's going to tell us what we need to hear and correct us. And it may hurt our feelings, might make us mad for a little bit. But really, if we'll listen, we'll be better off. Well, let's go to the next passage, Proverbs 27 and verse 17. Iron sharpens iron. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And so just keep that in mind and go to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, where we find a similar statement. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. And so there's that iron sharpening iron. Two are better than one because they have good reward for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? I use this sometimes in wedding ceremonies because it seems to be appropriate. And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And so iron sharpens iron. You get a good friend. You can talk to him. You can sort of confide in him. He's going to give you good advice. May not be what you want to hear. Might be what you need to hear. But he's going to give you good advice, good counsel. You can make plans together. All of those things. If you're involved in some sort of discussion, while he's talking, you can think, you know, you can think and you can think, well, let's see now, what's the appropriate thing to say here? While you're talking, he can think. And so iron is sharpening iron. And as a result of this friendship, well, then people can resist things that are going to harm them, and they can thrive, especially thrive spiritually. I thought, you know, Jesus acknowledges this principle when he sent his disciples out two by two. Iron sharpens iron. You got two people going, and that's a great advantage, and good work can be accomplished. When you have a good friend, and you're discouraged, he can encourage you, or she can encourage you. When one is talking, the other can be thinking. You can discuss issues, plan for upcoming situations, confide in each other, persuade each other to do right. All of those things. Iron sharpens iron. So here's, what, three or four passages from the Old Testament that describes true friendship, what friends do for each other, the kind of relationship we want to cultivate. And so I thought, well, here's a good, what's a good Bible example of friends? Well, the one that very obviously and quickly came to mind is the relationship between David and Jonathan. And so let's look at that a little bit. The relationship between David and Jonathan begins in 1 Samuel chapter 18. And so David has distinguished himself. He's gone out. He's defeated the giant. Verse 58, Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I'm the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." And it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David, and because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to... I suppose that's a royal robe of some kind. He's the son of the king. And so I'm taking off this robe that I'm wearing as the son of the king, and I'm giving it to you, David. Took off his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. So here's this wonderful, close friendship that develops here in 1 Samuel chapter 18. And it continues. These two men would not likely become friends. You wouldn't expect them to become friends. Saul becomes jealous of David and tries to kill him on more than one occasion. And Jonathan is the heir. Remember, Saul even himself told Jonathan, as long as David is alive, you will never be king. And so if Jonathan was an ambitious person, he would not befriend David, or at least wouldn't continue to be friends with David, but of course he does. And when Saul tries to kill David, well, Jonathan is loyal to David, not to his father. And so look at a couple of occasions when that takes place, where David tries to kill Saul, but Jonathan is loyal to David. Chapter 19, verse 1. Saul told David, his son, and all his servants to put David to death. But Jonathan, Saul's son, was greatly delighted in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "Saul, my father, is seeking to put you to death. Now therefore, please be on guard in the morning and stay in a secret place and hide yourself." And then verse 3, "I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. If I find anything, then I will tell you." And so Jonathan, not loyal to his father on this occasion, but he's loyal to David. And so that's just an illustration of the closeness of their friendship. Jonathan is willing to expose himself to the displeasure and the wrath of his father in order to be loyal to his friend David. And then look at chapter 20 and verse 1. Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, "What have I done?" And so this is the second occasion when Saul is seeking David's life. "You know, your father is seeking my life. What have I done? What is my iniquity and what is my sin before your father that he's seeking my life?" And Jonathan can hardly believe it. I just don't believe he's doing that, but I'll find out. In verse 4, Jonathan said to David, whatever you say, I will do for you. And so they make a plan between the two of them to find out if David's life is in danger from the hands of Saul. And if it is, well, certain things will be done. If it's not, well, then certain things will be done. And so verse 13, "If it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father." And as the story unfolds, of course, Jonathan finds out that, in fact, Saul is seeking David's life. And he lets David know that so David can escape. And again, that's just an illustration of the loyalty that Jonathan has for David. Well, look at verse 41. "When the lad was gone, David rose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times." And this is David in the company of Jonathan now. He bowed three times. "They kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the more. And Jonathan said to David, 'Go in safety, Inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever. Then he rose and departed, and Jonathan went to the city. Wow, what a touching scene. We're friends. We made a pact. And the Lord will be between us. We may not see each other, but the Lord will be between us. Wow, that's very touching. And so when Jonathan dies in 2 Samuel chapter 1, look at that passage, 2 Samuel chapter 1, Jonathan dies. David finds out that Jonathan has been killed in battle. And this is what he says about him. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. Brave, just as brave as anybody ever was. The sword of Saul did not return empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life and in their death, they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles, stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan is slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You've been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. How have the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? What a powerful statement. You've been so good to me, so pleasant to me. My love for you is greater than my love for a woman. Well, that's biblical friendship, isn't it? And so here you got two people who are close, very strong emotional bond between them. Jonathan's soul was knit to David. Friends like David and Jonathan spend time together. They stick close together. They have common interests. They influence one another. They may introduce each other to new ideas and new ways of doing things. They give each other advice. They make plans, just Jonathan and David making plans together. They persuade us to take certain actions. And so we and our friends have a great amount of influence on one another. And so it's important to make friends of God's people. Because all of those things are true. It's so important that we make friends of God's people. Well, I'm just about out of time, but let me just survey just some examples of the statement, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, evil companions corrupt good morals. You know, this is what friends that are not good will do for us. We discussed Lot in our Bible class. Because he chose to live in Sodom, well, the influence of the people of Sodom was exerted upon him, though he was able to resist it, but also exerted on his family members who are not so strong in resisting it. And so as a result of some poor choices, even though Lot is a righteous man, almost all of his family is lost. Yeah, now, including his wife. And his two daughters, who were spared, are greatly affected by the ruin of Sodom themselves. Now, be careful who your associates are. Be careful who your companions are. You know, they just have a great amount of influence on us. In Exodus chapter 32, Aaron is influenced by the people to make a golden calf. And so Moses is delaying up in the mountain, and they come to Aaron, make us a calf, you know, make us a god. And so Aaron is influenced by them. And he does it. Oh, he tries to shift the blame a little bit. But the text is very clear. This is Aaron's doing. Aaron is guilty. He acts at the instigation of the people who are intent on doing evil. Samson and Solomon are influenced by the women they become involved with. Samson is influenced by Delilah. Solomon influenced by the many wives, the pagan wives that he marries. And they turn his heart away from the Lord. It's so easy for young Christian men and women to be blinded by love. Oh, that's so easy to do, isn't it? And so we fall in love and we just become blind. We just become blind. And if we're involved with somebody who's not a Christian, not a strong Christian, really doesn't have much interest, if any, in spiritual things, because we're involved in such an emotional, romantic relationship, we can be swept away, and pretty soon, well, we're lost to the cause as well. If the principle, make friends of God's people, is sound advice, if that's sound advice, in what area could it be more sound than in this area? Choosing a companion, strong Christian, not just a Christian, strong Christian, to date and to marry. He or she will become your best friend, your closest advisor, most intimate counselor, comforter, and persuader. Make friends of God's people. And so find someone who's going to encourage you in the way that you need to go. Peter finds himself in the company of the accusers of Jesus, and when they put the pressure on him, well, he yields to the pressure. Now, these might not be his friends, but it just shows that we are influenced by the company that we keep. And if we surround ourselves by those who are not interested in spiritual things, when they put the pressure on us, well, then we are susceptible to yielding as well. We know many people, don't we, who have had good training, good training spiritually. They've learned their lessons well. They have good examples in their family, from their members of their family, good teaching in church. But because they decided to associate with people who influenced them for evil, they abandoned the faith. We know people like that, don't we? Sometimes people will ask me, well, what happened to this person? And more often than not, the answer is, well, I think they just got in with the wrong crowd. Just got in with the wrong crowd. And that's what happened. Oh, we know instance after instance of it. On the other hand, good friendships produce good results in our lives. Ruth is influenced by Naomi to serve God. She marries Boaz and becomes an ancestor of David. Barnabas finds Saul. So Barnabas is in Antioch and there's a new church there. He goes to Tarsus and he finds Saul. They begin traveling together. They work together as a team. And soon Saul becomes the leader of that endeavor. There's a good friendship right there. Iron sharpening iron. Timothy goes preaching with Paul and becomes a trusted and reliable and valuable worker in the kingdom. Again, here you got two working together. And because of the influence of one on the other, well, he's made stronger and stronger. And so we can also say that we know people who have had almost no religious training, no restraint taught, no meaningful moral guidance, bad examples at home. And yet, because of the influence of a godly person, often a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a school friend or a business associate, they become strong Christians themselves because of the influence, the good influence of a Christian. Well, the book of Proverbs in chapter 2 and verse 20 encourages us to walk in the way of good men. Walk in the way of good men. Make good choices about our friends. Not all our friends have to be Christians. I'm not saying that. In fact, I think we probably should have some friends that are not Christians. After all, how are we going to reach people and bring them in, bring them to Christ, if we don't have some kind of relationship with them? But know that our friends are going to influence us for good or ill. And so we need to choose friends. Choose friends that are going to help us get to heaven. And so like the hymn said, over 100 years ago now, make friends of God's people. If you're here today and not a child of God, we want to give you an opportunity to respond to the invitation. If you're ready because you believe in Jesus to confess your faith, having repented of your sins, you can be baptized this morning, this very day, and become a Christian, become a disciple of Jesus. If you're already a Christian but you're not faithful in your service, think about your standing before God. Think about what you would hear Him say in the judgment. If you were to meet Him today. If you're not ready, get ready. If you're a Christian who's not ready, get ready. Turn away from sin. Ask God to forgive you, and He will. If we can help you in some way this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.